Twice a week, Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay dissect the biggest topics in Black culture, politics, and sports on their show, Higher Learning. They discuss the most important and timely conversations while also frequently inviting guests on the podcast and occasionally debating each other. Check out Higher Learning on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available to the general public. Getting vaccinated is the first step to getting back to all the things we miss most.
It's really true. I've been able to see friends and family that I wasn't able to see for a long time. I've been going to some restaurants. I've been to a bar. Let me just tell you, going to a bar, pretty fun. And I was able to do it without a mask because I was vaccinated.
I've been to a bookstore, which was my version of going to a bar, which is a really sad statement. But... That's okay. And finally traveling and seeing friends and family who live across the coast.
It's
only because of the vaccine.
It feels like things are getting back to normal because we've been vaccinated. But, you know, it's okay to still have questions like, should I get it? Is it safe? Should I wait? You can get the facts at getvaccineanswers.org so you can make an informed decision. Welcome to Jam Session. I'm Juliette Littman.
I'm Amanda Dobbins.
We got some fun stuff today. We're going to talk about Nobu Malibu, one of our favorite locations that I've never been to.
Nor have I. Driven by it.
I've seen it, though. Yeah, been adjacent. We are going to talk about the latest development with Skims, Kim Kardashian's shapewear line. And
apparently,
so
we
much
just
more.
Are a Skims blog now Skims here at Jam Session.
Yeah, Amanda is a tester, and I'm a watcher. And we also are going to talk about the Business Insider story about the fall of the Instagram cookery line, Great Jones, which I always had a lot of questions about. So I'm like excited to discuss. But first, we're just going to follow up on, you know, probably the biggest celebrity news of the month. Probably of the year, maybe like of this decade so far, which is Britney Spears and her fight to end her conservatorship, which we kind of did a precursor for last week. I'm glad to be following up because I actually do feel quite differently than when we last spoke.
Absolutely.
And Tea Time covered it on Friday. And then, you know, we had the director of Framing Britney Spears from the New York Times, Samantha Stark, on the pod on Friday. She and I just kind of did a quickie interview and she was really interested. She had like so many interesting insights. I recommend you check that out. She's been in the courtroom for the proceedings, including last week. So she had some really interesting insight. So check that out. Amanda, when we spoke, we were both just kind of like, should we cover this? Like, we were just kind of like, this is a uncomfortable situation with someone who we know we're not getting the full picture, but we fear she's unwell, and sort of had mixed feelings about even talking about it. But obviously, Britney Spears is so famous that it's newsworthy. How are you feeling now that we have heard the 23-minute testimony?
I mean, yes, we should be covering it. And I think we can continue to talk about how we cover these things and how we talk about them. But I was incredibly saddened by everything that I heard. I don't know what else to say except that it was heartbreaking. And That is a person who is in a legal situation, a life situation that she absolutely should not be in. I don't know how you walk away from the testimony in any other way. And I thought it was really powerful to hear from Brittany herself. And when we talked last week, you know, you kind of identified as we were trying to sort through our feelings that just the lack of Brittany in this extended coverage about her, her lack of agency and the lack of voice from of hearing from her. We heard from a lot of people on a lot of different sides, presuming to speak on her behalf or trying to make decisions for her or trying to guess what she wanted. And I think that made us both uncomfortable. But then we did finally have the opportunity to hear from her. And it was a very clear and upsetting and you know, I do think like historic testimony.
Absolutely.
And I really did underline for me the extent to which we have not been hearing from her, and that and in a lot of ways this is a situation of just a really baroque and horrifying legal arrangement in order to be able to not hear from Britney Spears, but just also like a person who has just kind of been abandoned by everyone in her life. And it seems it's just incredibly sad. I felt very sad. And I was glad that she had the opportunity to speak. And I hope that it does change her situation. And I hope that all of this extra effort that everyone is, you know, putting around her actually does come to like a positive resolution for once.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think hearing Britney speak, first of all, you know, we have speculated a lot about who's running her Instagram. And this remains like a fixation of mine that I think just because I have found the content over the last year so strange. Mm-hmm. But I think hearing her say like, I'm sorry, I've been lying, or she posted that on Instagram. She just like continues to raise so many questions. I actually have a lot of logistical questions about her life still. Like,
of course,
it's been reported that she and her boyfriend went to Hawaii this week, and I'm just like, how does that happen? Like, how is that possible? Not because I'm like questioning anything, but I just like kind of like still don't really get it. And so I think that like hearing her give this testimony that, you know, was clearly she was reading from something, which I would do too. But it's great to prepare. I'm just sort of like, how does she have, and to the extent she has any agency, like how does she? And you know, like I was curious, like who helped her write what she said, because it, you know, it was quite powerful. But I think just sort of what I'm trying to get at is finally hearing from her was so like startling and jarring that it was sort of it felt like a movie. And I don't mean that to like to be reductive of her situation, but it felt like the kind of thing that would honestly happen in like an X-Men movie when like someone's been under the control of like an evil power for so long that you forget who they actually are and you forget it and you lose sight literally of their humanity. And it just came back into such stark relief. And it was just incredibly jarring. I mean, I can't really think of a of a celebrity parable out of like real life. It was so strange.
Yeah. I also have questions after this, and I'm trying to negotiate my own level of, you know, what is well-meaning interest and what is like pure prurient and not helping at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think I personally have always like felt that, especially in relationship to Britney Spears, just because, you know, we grew up. There's been a lot of references to 2007 and Britney's 2007 in the past few weeks. And I was there. I remember it. And to some extent, as an audience member, I participated in it. And so I try to give space and to not make my business what is not my business. But I also do think at this point, you have to admit that like the Free Britney movement at some point pushed this along. And I do wonder whether she would be where she is and whether even frankly, she would have testified in the way that she did without this kind of online, pretty intense and like sometimes uncomfortable to me movement in order to like, to expose these issues and to bring this person back kind of into the, you know, the driver's seat of her own life, I guess, and certainly like her public narrative and even just to speak. So I it still makes me a little uncomfortable, just the amount of scrutiny, because it still feels like all of the scrutiny and everything that's outside pouring onto Britney is, again, something that she doesn't have control over. And like, that's what you take away from this, right? Like, this is a person who just has lost, like, has no control over her own life and has no one in her life that we know of who seems to like really be advocating for her. You know, all celebrities go through, at the level of fame Britney Spears was and is, just a lot of very tricky situations. And I think the people who have a good support system and people they can trust make it through, and the people who don't run into issues. And it seems like she's just kind of alone in it. So we definitely, you want all of the support for her, but I'm still just like, oh God, this seems, it seems like a lot. It still seems like a lot.
It really does. Was there one moment that like particularly shocked you? That you were just like, I can't believe that we're hearing this, or
Yeah, I mean, the IUD moment, I think, for everybody was just the real takeaway. And it's not the only takeaway, but that was kind of like the breakthrough. And I think even the way she spoke, it was like at the very end. And that in addition to everything else she's lost in her life, she's just lost the ability to decide whether she wants to have another kid. And she's lost her reproductive rights completely. And, you know, that is an ongoing issue for a lot of women in America, but the literal, cruel, complete absence of civil rights way that it was portrayed was really shocking. Completely shocking.
I think the other thing that's just so confusing is like how things develop. And I was asking Samantha about this, like, where do things go from here? Like, it's just so crazy that like this testimony happened and Samantha pointed this out, and then just sort of like, there is no immediate action. Like, as far as we know, there's not been no petition to like end the conservatorship.
Right.
And
that was another, maybe not shocking, but sort of like confusing, and I thought sad part of her testimony, where she's like, I didn't know that I could petition to end this. I didn't know. And I was afraid to speak out, and that kind of just like the opaque mess of it all. And it's seeming, as you said, like there is still like no real plan going forward. Seems like a mess.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, it's just really upsetting. I hope that she gets some agency back. I hope she ends up happy, whatever that is. And the other thing is like, just on like a personal level, I'm so close to my family, and like, I consider family so important. For her to be so abused by her family and clearly so angry, including her sister, Jamie Lynn Spears, like quote unquote, finally spoke on I think Monday, like about how she supports her sister, but has been doing it off social media, but then was making this proclamation on social media. And then the combination of like her father living in an RV that on the grounds where sort of like all of the Britney Spears mementos are stored. It's just like incredibly, incredibly sad. And I also, you know, it's just like incredibly sad to me. I don't even know what else to say. I mean, it's cool that she's getting support. Like the Christina Aguilera moment was cool, but I don't know. It's just depressing.
Yeah. That was my ultimate takeaway, is just like, this is just a tragedy, and definitely one of just like the defining celebrity stories of our lifetime in an incredibly sad way. And I agree with you. I hope that she finds happiness. Like that's truly what I want.
Really? It's just like so brutal. I hope she's enjoying Hawaii. We both love Hawaii. So
yes, I really, really hope that she's having the time of her life.
Me too. Me too.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
All right, let's move on. There's an article in the New York Times by Tejal Rao about Nobu Malibu. And I was just absolutely delighted to see it. You sent it my way. And I was just like, thank you for recognizing the kind of the playground of the celebs right now. And it was like a great reexamination of this phenomenon that you and I have been tracking for like a year.
Yes, a great zeitgeisty moment. And I think the review does something interesting, which it both obviously references the fact that Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck were paparazzi there and that this is a real celebrity hangout. And also turns it into a review about the like appeal of restaurants and what a restaurant or a space where people together and especially famous people together can be and that phenomenon separate from great cooking or, you know, takeout or how we prepare food, like the vibe, if you will, for lack of a better word. I think vibe is probably the right word. So I really enjoyed that. But I just also enjoy the decision of let's cover the celebrity hotspots. These places are accessible if you have, say, the New York Times paying your dining bill,
yeah.
which is crucial. And that because Nobu Malibu is extremely expensive. And one of the first things that I thought when reading this is like, wow, I would absolutely love to go to Nobu Malibu on someone else's dime because it's really expensive. And the deciding factor in most of these celebrities' hotspots is money, which is central. But like if someone is funding you, you can go. And I do really just enjoy the form of journalism that's like, let's blow a little extra money on this in order to open up all of these celebrity hotspots to everyone else so you can know what's going on. You too can be a part of the magic.
I also really liked how the article started, which was with such a great, great salient point about why that's like the Nobu thing is so funny. And I'll just read from it. Mm-hmm. This was like in one of the first few graphs. Was anyone surprised to see pixelated photos of Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck here just a few weeks ago? No, because Nobu is 2002 and Bennifer in Frosted Tips. Nobu is Vanessa Carlton making her way downtown in season 5 of Sex and the City, shaken together and poured into a tall-stemmed glass. That is just such an acute observation about Nobu. It's really so true. It's like, Nobu is forever. Like, miso cod is like so 90s to me. But mm-hmm. A, it's delicious. And B, it really is enduring. I guess this Nobu opened the one in Malibu in 2012. So it's not quite 2002. But it Nobu, I remember when it opened in New York. And it was like such like a big deal. I think that Robert De Niro was an investor. Or like it was kind of like part of the Robert De Niro Tribeca movement.
Yes.
And it's just so funny to kind of like to track that. And it also really does go along with kind of like this era of pop culture where everything that's old is new again. Sex and the City is coming back. Bennifer 1.0 version 2, like all of this stuff. And I just thought I love that that the Times went so far as to situate this place in that moment because it's something that it just really, you know, resonated.
I mean, that is part of the appeal. That's why people go there. That's why it's still making money. I mean, I think that is like good journalism. It's just taking something that you and I care about seriously that most people don't care about, even though it's a huge money-making venture. But the kind of celebrity history of Nobu and where it fits in the like pop cultural zeitgeist over time, you love to see it. Thanks. Yeah. Let's do some more. Like, what's up with One Oak these days? You know, like, just let's go. What are the new ones? Has anyone done like a great profile of Catch? Just like, I would love to know everything about Catch.
It's okay? A great point. I would too. And I think Catch expanded. And then like, you know, there's a couple of other hotspots, like the more recent ones that are like Delilah is opening in Vegas. Like, I'd love to know more about that.
Sure.
I also want to know about all of these chefs, because you want to know what? A lot of these places like really do have good food. That's one of the things about Nobu. The food is actually quite delicious. The spicy, the tuna on sticky rice or whatever that is, spicy tuna on rice, it's so delicious. Like, I actually do like Nobu food.
Listen, I wasn't joking when I was like, I'd love to go to Nobu Malibu on someone else's dime. If anyone would like to sponsor that, like, I'm available. Call me. Like,
how do we get in? Oh my goodness. I will be kind of sad when this Nobu resurgence ends. It can't go on for forever, but I will be happy when, I've just been enjoying it. It's just very funny to me. It's also very clueless.
I think that's true. And it is having like, quote, a moment, which is wrapped up in the Bennifer moment for sure. And I think also, as we said last week, of the kind of celebrity pandemic, they figured out the pandemic thing very quickly. And it was a place that celebrities seemed to trust and went and were not worried about. So that kind of recentered it in, I guess, the celebrity consciousness. But there is this thing about it where it's like, it's just part of the machinery at this point, right? It's like Craig's. That's another one. I mean, there should just be like an entire book about Craig's. These Absolutely. Are all the LA spots too. I mean, there are a ton of New York spots as well. But these places,
I feel
that
like
just
the New York ones come and go a lot faster. Like, up and down came and went very quickly.
Right. Well, but there are some that are kind of like the buzzy place of the moment. And then there are some that are institutions.
Pasties.
That it's like, what we do is cater to the celebrity. And we don't really mind that there are some paparazzi like on the photo, you know, across the way. The Times did try to do this a few months ago with Giorgio Baldi, which is another like kind of classic institutional.
Yes.
See Rihanna there a lot. LA spot right on the PCH and the Pacific Palisades. I didn't like think that piece was as effective, but they were going for the same thing of like, there are these places that kind of exist by catering to celebrities. And if you have enough money, you can go as well, which, and so we, as the, you know, paper of record, will go for you and pay the money and tell you what it's about. I really like it. I think it's great. Let's do more.
Yeah. I'm into it as well. Let's keep it going.
Okay.
On the sort of a geographically adjacent topic, Kim Kardashian's Skims was announced to be outfitting the U.S. Olympics team this year in Tokyo, giving them all like sports bras and underwear. I think the men as well. I think everyone's getting some Skims apparel.
Yeah, it seems to be the undergarments and pajama wear for the Olympics.
I mean, I was shocked by this.
You were really shocked. And you have
work?
The right
who's
to be.
Who's paying whom in this relationship?
I don't know. I have to assume that someone, some sponsor, is paying Skims in some capacity. Or maybe it's just, I don't know. I guess Ralph Lauren pays for the uniforms, I guess, and that's like good advertising, right? So I'm assuming that they're not getting like a kickback from the IOC or whatever, but I don't know. It seems like all the IOC does is kickbacks.
It's like in the NBA, in the NBA and the other sports leagues, it's like the clothing company pays the league to make the stuff, and then it's like, you know, then they get the benefit of being able to sell the merchandise. So is Skims paying the IOC or like US Olympics, whatever it is, to have this opportunity?
Probably, except I just have a hard time imagining the Kardashians being like, sure, we'll pay anyone anything, but especially the Olympics team. So maybe they're just covering the costs. My initial reaction to this was, I think it must be pretty hard to be an Olympian. And you don't really have a life. Like, I don't, I think all that you do as Olympian your whole life is you train, and it's really demanding, and I admire it. I don't have that kind of discipline. There's nothing like, I don't have goals that powerful in any walk of my life. So I think that the Olympians must spend like a lot of time doing their sports and doing all the like auxiliary stuff that you got to do, you know, the strength training and the ice bath and like blah, 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 blah. And then probably whatever downtime they have left, they just watch reality TV. Because, like, what else do you have the brain capacity for? So if the Olympians like the Kardashians and are excited about the Skims, and this is something that can add to what is a very stressful but exciting time in their lives, I'm not that mad about it. If it's what the Olympians want, which I can kind of see it being what they want. I mean, they're all like 22 years old and they've, you know, just been in a swimming pool their entire life. That's all you do. So, and then maybe you just like train, watch Kardashians on your phone on your like way home. So you get some free Skims. That's great. Congratulations to them.
Yeah. Congratulations to everyone. I'm just sort of wondering, like, I assume that the Kardashians would continue to have a big TV presence. I'm sure they will. But, like, are they just becoming product pushers now? Like,
Yes, of course. Yeah.
It's just merchandise.
Yeah. Because they can. And because they make a lot more money off of it. I guess they have more control. Yeah.
I guess that's, like, the way that you do it instead of, like, trying to be an actress now. You just parlay it into manufacturing.
It's so much more efficient. It's like, here, I put my name on this. Give me money. Like, it's... I it's dark genius, but yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah,
it's the ultimate licensing deal. Yeah. Licensing your name.
Exactly.
It's like licensing your life rights, but for products instead of stories.
Right. But I think they're making a lot of money off of it.
No, they are. They absolutely are. I mean, I don't know why I'm knocking it or like acting so surprised. You've only been talking about it for a decade, but it's just, this is like so big. I can't believe it. Also, I think because the products themselves, like if you look at the pictures, like look different than the other Skims items. So it's like, mm-hmm. It's a specific product line for the Olympics. And I just didn't see this coming. You know, I thought this was like the domain of Nike and Ralph Lauren.
Yeah. And I guess like the outerwear is still the domain of Ralph Lauren. But the people like the Skim stuff.
Yeah, I know. Have you tried on your bra? How do you like it?
No, I haven't gone outside yet, so I don't have to wear it. But when I tried it on, it was like it's nice and they're pretty inexpensive also. Like it's a good price point. I don't know. I haven't done the full range. I'm not really in the market for shapewear with only one leg. You know, believe it or not, when I go out for my night on the town and hit the red carpet, the slit of my dress is not all the way up that I only, you know, I had to previously cut off one of the legs of my shapewear. I mean, can you imagine? Like, no. What kind of life is that? Anyway.
It's the life of going to Nobu Malibu and Craig's.
Do you think people are wearing shapewear in Nobu Malibu?
Yes, absolutely. If they think they're going to be photographed, 100%.
That's totally tough.
Malibu's not for going to the beach. It's like going to like dinner. It's nice.
No, I know, but it's just like if you have to wear shapewear to go to the Nobu, you're not going to enjoy your meal at Nobu. You're going to be constricted. That's sad. I would like a world for everyone where you don't have to wear shapewear unless you're walking a red carpet, and even there, you don't really need to. But I understand the stress.
Yeah. I just can't believe it. I'm like, also, well, I want to get the Skims Olympic apparel. I could see that happening. I love a good national garment.
They also are just edging really close to like 90s Calvin Klein, the classic ads that we all saw, which are appealing to me. And also, obviously, again, the 90s are back. But no, I don't think that I'll be buying the Olympics underwear. I think I'll keep that for Olympians. Again, I think they've worked really hard. They've never done anything else in their lives. They deserve some special underwear.
Okay, next. Last story of the day.
Yeah.
Also related to Instagram product. Business Insider had a long profile of the mutiny at Great Jones. They called it a mutiny, which is Great Jones is like a Le Creuset competitor that's primarily... That targeted the Instagram demographic with like sort of very pleasant millennial pink type of colors and blush type of colors on like the Dutch ovens and other cookware, started by two women who had a huge falling out. They're camp friends and they had a huge falling out. And this is about sort of the downfall of this story. Very similar to like the downfall of the Wing and kind of like a lot of the telltale signs of like a came out hot and fast and sort of melted down. But it wasn't because the product necessarily was bad, right?
I think the interest in the meltdown and the marketing and probably the audience for this story is similar to the interest in the meltdown of the Wing and the audience for the Wing. My understanding of the Wing was that it was a lot more complicated, much larger and had a lot more press coverage and came to signify a lot more issues and just, you know, a lot of the members of color at the wing just felt completely excluded, and it got pretty messy. And then also, of course, there was a pandemic that sort of completely undermined the wing's basic business model. So it's slightly different. This is a story about eight people. And like literally in total, because it's the two founders and the six employees, and a really classic story of what you present on Instagram versus what's happening in real life is what it seemed to me anyway. And so I think you may not know the name Grate Jones, but you definitely, if you look at Instagram regularly, as often as Juliet and I do, which I don't know, again, we're humans in the world. We're trying our best, but you would recognize the pink or the yellow Dutch oven. It was a very like visually recognizable and Instagrammy, like instant success. And then everything behind the scenes just kind of seemed to be messy and people not getting along at all.
One thing I found really interesting about this is that the company only had six full-time employees, mm-hmm. which is really small. And so like these six people and like the meltdown had to be so messy to capture this amount of attention. And I think also one of the co-founders, Sierra Tischgart, really courted a lot of attention. The article points out that she had a domino spread about her apartment and her wedding was featured in Vogue and sort of like really wanted the attention. And I think there was must have been so much animosity, because that's like, I think a startup of eight people failing is like not a story unto itself.
Right. No, there's a great quote from, I believe, one of the six former employees that said she wanted to be Emily. She wanted to be Whitney, referring mm-hmm. to Emily Weiss, the founder of Glossier, and Whitney, the Tinder turned Bumble. I can't
Whitney
even remember.
Wolford.
Yes, Whitney Wolford. But she is one name only to me in this context. And yeah, Instagram envy. Like what a quote female founder means on Instagram and just kind of Instagram versus reality. But because it was so small, it just, there aren't any of the really complicated business factors. There aren't any of the complicated, I mean, you know, there are some, and there is a story in particular about the one Black employee at Grate Jones being kind of singled out to speak about her feelings last summer and feeling uncomfortable. So I don't want to present it as like there was like really nothing going wrong at all. But as you said, it's just a really small company, and the amount of attention on it while it was successful, but especially now, just seems sort of like the Instagram story that we expect every 3 months of like, oh, that thing was really popular and now they all hate each other. And now we get to enjoy the schadenfreude of this thing that was presenting as perfect falling apart.
Totally. And it just seemed like Sierra Tischgart just did, you know, was not well liked by her employees. Like, and I guess in the domino spread, she shared a recipe for roast chicken, which one of her employees had sent to her and like didn't credit her employees. So it just seems like a bad boss. But I do think that there's just such a deep interest in people our age and like debunking Instagram myths, whether they mm-hmm. are active or passive or like whatever it is, it like lends itself to a story like this. And like the Instagram celebrity, I do think that it's interesting that they noted Emily and Whitney, because both of them like use Instagram, but actually like what they do is actually pretty off platform. I mean, obviously Glossier has a aesthetic that translates to Instagram, but kind of predates it. I mean, if you watch The Hills, you know about Emily the intern. So, mm-hmm. And obviously Bumble is just dating app unto itself that also really harnessed the kind of like girl boss idea. But anyway, I think that like a miscalculation is that like the Instagram can be all of it. I think that's like much more short lived than something that was like actually like a product that people become obsessed with.
Yes, exactly. That's what it is. I mean, you can tie it even to Skims in a way, is that I think some people might look at the lesson of Skims and be like, oh, I just have to be Kim Kardashian and people will buy whatever. And that might be true to an extent. But also, it seems like people at some point, the products are like, oh, this is pretty good. And you kind of have to have the product take on a life of its own. And I think there are probably at this point a huge number of Glossier users who are very aware of like Glossier's Instagram presence, but not Emily Weiss.
Yeah.
And definitely the same for Bumble, right?
For sure.
That's like a thing on its own. But the flip side of this is that this really just is like the last beat in the Instagram story now. Anyone, you become famous on Instagram, everything looks perfect. You've got the pink whatever. And then fast forward 4 months, like, oh, it was all a lie. And like, we just like expect that. That's like part of the deck, you know, of that's beat one, beat two, beat three, beat four. And you just kind of write it as long as you can. It's weird. Maybe we should all just spend less time on Instagram.
That's probably the answer.
I don't know what else to say. and try to be like nice people and, you know, make things that people are interested in for the thing themselves.
Startup meltdown stories never get old, though. You know, I will read every single one. I'll watch all the documentaries. I mean, I'm into
it. Yeah. The whole founder thing just really also seems to be doing a disservice to pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
But it definitely makes for a great chapter in these stories. Yeah. You just know what's coming, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A real dearth of Ben and Jen news this past week.
I think that they are probably taking a step back. They seem to have the pulse on what's going on in the world when they're fighting for tabloid attention and when it's good to step back. And they were not going to have a lot of attention last week. And I think that's okay. And I respect them not, you know, fighting for the spotlight. Ben was photographed leaving her home. I think everything's still okay. But they're in the maintenance phase right now.
It's smart. We were getting a little oversaturated. They had to pull back a little bit.
Yeah. I support them. And as long as they're happy and doing what they want, then I'm just delighted.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Well, we'll be back next week. Should we do a books check-in next week, Amanda?
Yes. I have been getting a couple requests for it. I need to actually organize my book life.
Okay, great.
And we can maybe set some goals as well as some recommendations, because frankly, like, I, you know, my reading has been hit and miss the last couple of months, guys, but I'm going to lock in. It's
me too.
Summer.
I've been watching so much Bravo, but I feel the literary spirit taking hold now that it's summer.
That's so beautiful. That's really exciting.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Isaiah Blakely for producing this episode, and we'll be back next week.